Cheryl Dobinson is a bisexual activist based out of Toronto. Most notably, she is the creator of the bi feminist zine, The Fence. Dobinson is a busy woman, dividing her time between two jobs, one at Sherborne Health Center doing breast health promotion for lesbian and bi women, and the other at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, working on a program for queer moms. In the spare time that she has, Dobinson does workshops on bisexuality and co-facilitates Fluid, a group for bisexual, bi-curious, pansexual, genderqueer, questioning, and other youth who don't fit neatly into categories around sexuality. I got a chance to speak with Dobinson at Sherborne Health Center. This is an excerpt from our interview.
Obviously you felt that there was a need for a bi feminist zine. When did it hit you that you should be the one to make it?
Well, I don't know if it was ever the case that somehow it should be me, because it could be anybody, but when I decided that at least I would give it a try to take it on, I had been thinking about it for a while, probably, like in the year leading up to when I started, that maybe I would like to do. I'd never done a zine before, and I thought I would like to maybe at some point do some kind of a bi zine or magazine or, whether write a column for some other zine or magazine or something, like get sort of a more regular, something more regular going in terms of like writing or creating a space for bi people to write. And it was, I think, I have to like do my counting of years properly, but June 2002 is probably when it was that I was at a reading night for a literary series that used to happen in Toronto called Clit Lit, and it was the night was on the theme of bisexualities, and I like read a very short poem, and lots of other people read like really amazing stuff. It was like a women's and queer reading series, and that was the night that I absolutely felt, you know what, like this has to happen, like this has to all be put together, because it's great to come and share it in this space, like verbally and have it that way, but it needs to go further than that. Mm-hmm. And this sort of stuff needs to be distributed more widely. So either that night or the next day, I emailed everyone who had read at that and said, like, I'm going to put together this zine, don't know what it's called, don't really know much, but if you'd like to send me what you read or any other things of potential interest, I'm going to start putting this together. And, you know, it all, after that, then it was in motion.
A side note, I know you can get a subscription to it. Do you sit at home and put them in envelopes and send them out?
Of course.
People who have subscriptions?
Of
like
course.
You're the one who like licks the envelope?
Of course, it's a zine. Wow. Like, I like lay it out, get all the, you know, checks or money, take it to stores, lick envelopes.
Wow.
Everything.
Cut and paste?
Cut and paste.
Wow.
It's a totally like homegrown, do-it-yourself operation.
That's cool.
With scissors and tape. The tools of revolution.
Now, skipping to your job here, what does breast cancer have to do with bi and lesbian women? Why is there something special for them? Or specific for them?
If people ask me that a lot, which I think is really interesting, because I don't necessarily think that people ask it in the same way when there's a lot of different initiatives where it's like lots of different ethnocultural groups. There'll be breast cancer initiatives for Aboriginal women or South Asian women, immigrant newcomer women. And in the same way that, you know, if you have broad health promotion strategies that try to just reach all women, you know, that's pretty broad, and you're not going to reach all women with that. And it's going to be more effective if you look at some of the, cultural differences, identity differences among groups of women, in this case, which is, you know, your primary audience when you're thinking of breast health and breast cancer, and try to do outreach and engage and inform those communities in ways that are meaningful within, you know, that identity or culture. And within different sort of groups of women, there can be different rates of going and getting screened around breast health and different kinds of barriers to why women do or don't get screened around breast health. So for example, homophobia and biphobia might keep some lesbian and bisexual women from going and having a clinical breast exam or a mammogram, mm-hmm. whereas for another woman, a woman of color or a woman from a particular ethno-cultural group, there might be things around racism in healthcare, there might be things around language barriers or around different cultural ideas of, you know, who it's appropriate to have see your breasts. So if you do more specifically targeted interventions, then the idea is that you will be more successful in reaching a broad range of women than if you just sort of did one big, here's the breast health pamphlet for everyone. Yeah. But if you have the more specific, you know, initiatives, then you'll reach a lot more people through all the different pockets that you go into. And some of the specific things for lesbian and bisexual women, one is that the existing resources around breast health often don't acknowledge lesbian and bisexual women or aren't inclusive of lesbian and bisexual women, so we might not see ourselves reflected there or even think like, I don't want to pick up that pamphlet, like there's nothing there for me. Rates of screening are lower among lesbian and bisexual women than heterosexual women, so for going for a clinical breast exam or mammogram, there's some risk factors that are more relevant to our communities as a whole than to just like the general population of women, things like not having biological children, having children after age 30, higher body weight, higher rates of alcohol consumption. These are things that if you look at our communities as a whole, are the rates are higher, that those risk factors exist more in our communities. And also because, you know, lesbian and bisexual women, you know, might have different kinds of feelings about breasts. Like the brochure that we created really is designed to appeal to the fact that lesbian and bisexual women presumably find breasts attractive, mm-hmm. right? That we like women. And so a brochure that has, you know, breasts on it, that has like a fold out poster of like all these great photographs of, you know, queer women done by queer women photographers and is very celebratory of breasts, is pretty specific to the fact that, you know, that we're going to relate to breasts in a different way than a heterosexual woman might. So those are some of the many reasons.
Oh, cool. What are your plans for the fence? Do you have... Is it just going to continue as a zine? Would you ever make it into a little anthology?
So far, my plans are for it to continue as a zine, mm-hmm. but, I'm not saying that I wouldn't do other things with it. My partner, I know, is always trying to encourage me to, like, develop this more, and like, this could be, like, your job, and you could, like, make this beautiful publication and, you know, kind of undergo the transformation that some things have from a zine to more of a glossy magazine like Bust, you know, that used to be more in the zine realm and is now pretty firmly established as, you know, a cool magazine. Mm-hmm. And my big thing with the fence is that I'm only going to do what I want to do with it and what feels like comfortable and what doesn't feel like taking on too much work or doing it to please other people. For a long time, there was people be like, why don't you have a website? And I'd be like, I don't want to have a website. That's why. Like, you know, a certain point came when I decided, yeah, you know, I'll make a little website. But it was really about like, this is going to be my thing, you know, because I'm doing it, you know, just out of my home certainly for the benefit of other people. But I want it to be the project that I do out of love and not out of obligation or, you know, kind of like, well, someone said I should have a website. Mm-hmm. I better like get on that. And, you know, I want it to be that I do things with it because I feel that I want to or I'm capable of or that I'm going to still be able to enjoy it and put it together with the kind of love that I do now and not with resentment and bitterness.
It happens That's a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. And you have a book called I Could Not Speak My Heart.
Well, I have a chapter in a book.
Okay.
What's that about? So that is a chapter actually based on the research that I did for my master's research review paper. So it's all about these strategies of survival and resistance among gay, lesbian, and bisexual youth. And the book overall is about like queer youth and education and social justice. And so, you know, I wanted to submit a piece to that because I thought that the work that I did for my master's really fit in well with that and hadn't been published elsewhere, and would be great to have that out in a Canadian setting.
Yeah. What will you be doing when you're 60?
When I'm 60, I hope that I'm having fun and, you know, still doing a lot of things that I do now, and, you know, am able to, and I hope that I have a lot of the kind of work that I'm doing right now, like, has been taken up by other people as well, so I can be sitting back and enjoying someone else doing some of the things that I think are important, and maybe I don't have to do them. But yeah, I don't think I've thought a whole lot about what I'd be doing then. I'm not good with, like, the super long-term plans, because I think that, you know, life changes, and I'm really open to that, and I'll have, you know, different kinds of plans, and then I will see what happens, you know, when I think, even just back over the last 5 years, 10 years of my life, you know, 5 years ago, I wouldn't have even thought I'd be doing the things that I'm doing right now. And 10 years ago, it would have seemed even more impossible, unlikely, remote, and you know, mind-boggling. So, you know, who knows what I'll be doing in 5 years, let alone, you know, in 30 years when I'm 60, but I'm excited to find out what that will be.
If you think you'd like to submit to The Fence, the deadline for the 7th issue is December 1st. For more information, you can visit www.thefence.ca. If you're interested in attending a meeting of Fluid, it meets on Tuesdays from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. until December 13th. The location is Sherbourne Health Center, 333 Sherbourne Street, just north of Girard, across from Allen Gardens. For the full version of this interview, you can visit www.radio4all.net and just search for Dobinson. I'm Jen Watt for Radioactive Feminism on CKLN.